You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
You are now listening to the Ride or Cry podcast.
We'll see. I hope you like. These are the three things that I like currently: Tucson, The Sopranos, and then just like my past history.
Tucson, the
this is the show.
Like the natural.
Tucson, the place where I'm from.
I love commercials, so we can just talk about commercials.
And then the do you really?
Commercial life. I'm an entrepreneur of commercial, not only real estate property, but also commercial licensing, lending, commercial contracting, commercial financial devices. In every way, I'm just trying to exploit the poor people on the planet.
Gotcha.
Great.
In every way.
Perfect. Great.
Just making a list, checking it twice, mm-hmm. going to their house, mm-hmm. stealing their toys.
Yeah, you're like the cooler Santa Claus.
The not cooler one.
Cooler one. okay, so...
The dangerous.
So that was a great intro.
Yeah, so... hey, we haven't done one of these in a while. We've been really, really busy. We've been traveling. We've been...
Am I four?
Yeah. Turn it up, baby.
No, I'm turning it down.
Turn it up.
No, that has nothing to do with
it. That's mine.
The headphone volume's on the side. On this
oh, my God. Yeah, not even, yeah. What am I doing?
Hello.
Okay. That sounds better.
Wow, it's really good. Really bassy. Kevin Bassy. We're live with Kevin
so
Bassy.
We're here, yeah.
All right. Hey. Yeah, we haven't done one of these in a while. It's Eamon and I. It's Morgan, TJ, and Bams, and we're here with Bert from The Used.
Hi, everybody.
We are very excited.
And Sean,
as am I,
sitting on the couch. Oh. Well, hey. Well, thank you for coming in on a Saturday.
You're welcome.
Even though.
Well, I feel like as a musician, days
it's all
of
Friday.
The week aren't.
It's all Friday mm-hmm. night. It's all Monday morning.
Yeah.
It doesn't
matter.
Whatever
that means.
We just, I don't know. We flew in like
an hour ago. Yeah.
From where?
Michigan.
Yeah.
And boy, are our arms tired.
I was waiting for something to say that.
Morgan gave me the eye to do it.
Yeah.
Something inappropriate this way comes.
So we were like, and usually we would be like, yeah, we just flew in. We're not doing this. But.
You are the only exception.
You got to live life to the empty degree.
Yeah.
So we came from.
Yeah, we went to Detroit and then drove to Lansing.
Yeah.
And on that drive, we listened to the new album.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
This morning. It must have been a long drive.
At the crack of dawn.
It is a long album.
It's an
yeah.
hour and a half.
We time. Got.
It's a. Full feature length film.
Did we finish the album?
We didn't finish it.
No, you couldn't have.
No, there's no
so long.
No. We listened to it from the moment we got in.
So you missed the most important pieces.
That's what
Shit.
Ricky said.
Oh yeah.
Well, like all art, it's a sequence of motifs that cannot be understood mm-hmm. unless heard from the front to the back.
I know.
It's like
and we made a record for kids, like for the kid inside me who used to get a record. Shit, that's so rude and nasty.
That's okay. We have some rude people.
Actually, I just heard a bunch of other things. That wasn't just mine.
No, it was...
it was a whole...
Okay. I think we're good.
Somebody was texting.
It doesn't matter. We have...
You're texting me.
Do you want to know what? We've got...
Sexties.
We have the most unprofessional podcast because, number one, we don't really know how to do one. Mm-hmm. Just kind of like how we don't really know how to do a lot of the stuff, but we're just kind of winging it. So,
This is it.
This is the way it goes.
As good as it gets.
I hear you. So, I want you to talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, we made it.
Yeah.
For the kids who used to listen to records like I did growing up, you know, you get the booklet with the lyrics and you start it from the front and you go to the back. The very end of the record from the front to the back.
Yeah, that's why I was kind of almost bummed out to listen to it on the drive because I knew we couldn't finish it. And
yeah,
I kind of want to
really
like go home and listen to
we've
it.
We've put a heavy challenge, but I think that humans innately... We're explorers. We're passionate about a challenge, and we've been trained the opposite way.
So here's what I'm going to do. I want you to stay on track, because I think of a lot of shit while we're talking, and I don't want to, like, lose focus of, like, what this actually is. Yeah, so I, like, because I know that, like, the first album that I listened to from front to back and, like, read everything, and I know that world. When I was, like, a little kid, I really believed that, like, Michael Jackson taught me to read, because I remember having the tape, and I would listen to it, and I would read along, and I would be like, this is, I know that word. Now I know how that word is spelled. So the first album that, like, I remember ever being like, oh, yeah, this is a perfect album, is Jimmy Eat World's Clarity. And so I, like, do know that front-to-back album feel. And is this, like, so we fucked up and didn't listen to the whole album the whole way through?
No, you get a chance in life to be a human being. And you know, we're all full of life and things are always going on. But there's time for art. I think that was the biggest point. That we had so much material when we approached it. It was that specific motif idea and for me, we'll get more into that, but I put this record together in a really specific literary type of way that fits with what exactly inspired the record in its precise sequence. Sean will tell you that I fought really hard for the sequencing it's Thomas Pynchon's reflective parabola. It is gravity's rainbow, and it kisses on both sides.
So, when you were right, let me ask you this. So, did you, because we know a little bit of background about what the album is about. We had a tiny, Dana told us some shit, you know? And so,
good.
Yeah. So, which we will talk about if you're cool with it.
Of course.
That's
why I'm here.
So, and knowing that, and that being said, did you write the, like, lyrics first for this? And that, like, TJ and I have played in bands forever, and, like, I know that the songwriting process is always really different. And for something like this, I wondered to myself, I was like, man, I wonder if this dude wrote all this down and then put this to music first, because it seems like that could be, I don't know, I was just thinking, I was like, maybe that's what I would do.
It's always a combination, and the very first lyric written on this record, Justin had put the guitar for Mouth of the Canyon on our Dropbox as a demo idea, and before knowing anything about it, the first verse was the very first thing written for the lyrics for the record. Open the gates, I'm early, ready, the sage is worthy. And then, really cool story, full circle, I found out that Justin wrote that for college, for a piece he was supposed to transcribe, a piece for Dante's Inferno.
Oh shit, really?
And that magic, like, really in my mind, approaching the gates of mm-hmm. heaven and hell in a metaphoric way. So much metaphor, because I think that where I'm at as far as spirituality, or Plato's unmoved mover, or the idea of consciousness behind entropy, or the idea of God. It's a bad word, God, for me to say God, but the whole record is a bit further than that word. It's a bit. I'm giving credit to everybody. I'm trusting that you understand that God is not a man with a plan in the sky in my world. So that magic and that kind of cohesiveness of serendipity, which is something that, you know, maybe not meant to be, but was.
Right.
That did happen that way. So as the music is getting written and as the drums are being recorded, all these really heavy moments are presenting itself. And with the way that I read and research and write, so I'll be, like last night, for example, I'm through the fifth book of the Iliad, and I have to stop and write my own poem.
Long.
So that's it's not really that long.
Sounds long.
No, it's
isn't
short.
It, like, this big?
Yeah.
Well, it was meant to be recited in, like,
feel a, like, it's long,
a day,
like,
or
very,
a day and a half.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You read a whole thing the whole way through. It's, you know,
it's the most important thing ever written, right?
I don't know. I've never read it.
Imagine that what it took. Okay, a little background. Imagine what it took. 800 years of oral transcribing. So I'd have to tell it to you. You'd have to memorize it. You'd have to tell it to your kids. Their kids.
So it's a history's game of telephone.
800 years of that before they even started writing. And then the kids had to, like, copy it down. And you're saying it's long. Imagine how they felt
years.
When they were copying it down.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, that's 3,000 years.
Yeah, that's a
and
lot.
And now
we
still have it.
Yeah.
We still have it. And I don't know why we don't worship Zeus and all that. It's going to be way
I
more exciting.
I read it in Latin. In Latin class.
In Greek.
So you were talking...
Latin's pretty much ruined it. Like, they rewrote it. That's why we know Hercules. His name is Herculeus. Mm. But the Latins... We're more familiar with the Latin version of the Greek myths because of Shakespeare and Milton. And that's not about our record. That has nothing to do with us.
I want to talk a little bit. It got deeper. The quicker than I thought.
The lyrics
which
were
is
written
great.
At the same time as the...
great
music, but you'll notice there's parts of the record that feel like journal entry prose,
right?
And so it's me devouring all of my old. I'm always writing, so it's me just looking through all my old stuff
and seeing what.
So do you just keep a journal and then also write like lyrics on the side, or you keep a journal and then you look back on it and write a song from
that? Keep a specific journal. Okay. I keep a collection of writing. So I'm not ever working on a biography of my daily routine. I'm just writing about what happens.
Let me ask you this: do you use your notes in your phone? Because that's what I do. Like, because if I have a really bad memory. Like, I have a really bad memory for like reasons that like I'm a sober dude. So the word God, which I kind of want to talk to you about a little bit, it means something way different to me than it does. I think when you hear it with the capital G. Man in the sky, and it was a really hard concept for me to grasp. It was something.
I guess that's why it's cool to talk about gods.
It is. It's
Athena, Zeus, Apollo. These people, they didn't create us, and they didn't give a fuck about us. They're more likely to jerk you off,
yes,
than to help you out.
Look, man, I'd love to be jacked by
a
god.
See what kind of world, like, and you know, Aphrodite like, would 100% help you out with that.
I feel like I should have brushed up on. I feel like Dana should have been like, brush up on your Greek literature. Listen to the album.
If you were ready with Greek, then I'd be here with Latin. Like my
yeah, no, I have here. No, I have no. Like, this is the thing. I was like, you know what? In high school, they were like, you can do sports. Or playing a band. And I was like, oh, doing drugs and playing in a band sounds a lot easier. And I'm not very tall. So I'm going to go with that.
Yeah.
And so I just never ended up, like, I did, like, a couple of college courses, but, like, didn't retain anything. And
sucked at sports.
Did you?
Yeah, and I dropped out really, really young.
What did you play?
15. Well,
what did you
play? I tried to play... My dad's a sports guy, and growing up as a boy with a dad, you know, it's
if he's a sports
you
guy,
you want to do the things that make your parents happy, and
yeah.
You want to create that world for them. So it was basketball, which I was so short and crap, sucked at it, and then I wasn't too bad at baseball, but I was a gymnast, which I was actually really good at. And then,
that's awesome.
And then my choice became band or gym, and I chose band.
Yeah.
Broke you're my like, mom's heart.
Yeah, you're like,
about it.
Yeah, and I was like, this is easier. I can just like drink with my friends and be loud. This is great.
I didn't meet drinks or drugs until like I'd been in a band for, because I started writing songs when I was 8. I was forced on a piano, and then.
Do you still play?
Yeah.
You still play piano?
Yeah, of course.
It's one instrument that I've always thought was just like, because it's really easy, right or wrong. It's just like, if you hit a note, that's wrong, you're like, that sounds wrong. Where it's like hard to like figure it out on guitar, or if you're just like...
Well, also the language of music, there's no wrong.
Well, there's no right. I was literally talking to these guys about this on the plane ride. I was like, my friend Justin...
I've said this multiple times on the trip.
Yeah.
Babs has recently discovered that she has a gluten allergy. So we walk into,
it's a real dark time for me right now.
A Starbucks or something, and she's like, oh, I really want that pastry. And Morgan's like, well, you know, you can have the pastry as long as you accept the repercussions of eating that pastry.
Yeah. And that the fact that there's, that he believes there is no right and wrong, or wrong. He just believes that it just is. And the analogy that he gave me was...
Oh, it is
a
very weird one.
He's like, would you kill someone? He's like, could you kill an innocent person? I was like, he's like, is that right or wrong? And I was like, I don't know. And he's like, well, what if you had to kill one person or 8 people to save that those 8 people to kill one person? Is it right or wrong? And I'm like,
are we talking objective moralism?
Yeah, I don't know.
Don't even get me
look,
started.
Look, man, I fucking, look, this is
There's a book called The People in the Trees. That's all I'll say. All
right. Great. Well, okay. This is the shit that I sit up and think about at night.
Yeah, this is like when we...
I like to think about it this way. Imagine 1 million chimpanzees in Times Square.
Mm-hmm.
It would be mayhem.
Right.
Mm. It would be chaos. It would be bedlam.
Mm-hmm.
And so why does it work out that there can be 1 million people in Times Square?
Does it work out, though?
Of course it does.
Yeah.
Compared to chimpanzees?
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean...
So this is kind of from this book, Sapiens, but we've all agreed on fictions. Don't murder folks.
Sure.
That's something...
Try not to murder people.
Yeah, that's most of us... That's not a truth. That's not an objective truth.
Sure.
But we've all agreed on that, and that's brought us to this level. So if you think about the fictions along the way that have brought people together, they've also been the most harmful things for people as well. Religions as a fiction were so big, but beyond that, Osama bin Laden spending American petrol dollars before he died proves that that's the biggest one we have so far. That's the biggest fiction we have so far. And they're always growing, so the next one will be when money's useless, when robots do all the labor and... Like, they can no longer keep people poor.
Sure.
Then we'll have to agree on it.
I've been really, really, really debating doing, like, Bitcoin stuff. Because it's,
won't matter.
It doesn't...
We're not going to have a capital world to live in.
I mean, I feel like in our lifetime, it'll probably still matter. But, like, in the long run, probably...
Lifetime... I mean, yeah, maybe you're right. Well...
Just, like, by the time that I die...
for only 10 more years... I think by 2050, if you listen to experts, there would be no sapiens left. It would be a whole new race of human.
What do you think?
Computer humans.
You think computer human?
Well,
like,
we're already
AI shit?
We're already integrating robots in our blood to detect blood virus, disease. The list is endless. Like, we're... Optics.
We're going to make, like...
Brain chips.
They're just going to make a used...
We're in the dark time right now.
They're just
going
to make, like a better us.
That's the thing about art, is the connection to human expression is, as far as I think,
yeah, dude,
I know,
so let's
cannot
just,
be replicated by a computer. Okay,
that's the thing, is like, what do you think, if they can fucking replicate jobs and replicate, like, actions, but can they replicate emotions? I feel like that's the biggest struggle between, like, all of this shit that's been going, you know, we see it a lot, and especially in, like, Blade Runner, you know, things like current. I think it's, like, a very current thing. People are like, do these fucking things feel? They can do the job. Can they feel?
What is important to us as far as art? What are we reflecting on? What do we find? Why is the Iliad and Odyssey still important? It's a reflection on why mortality is serious, why it gives us the ability to love so intensely and to be so brave. Yeah. Computers don't die. How do they know what it takes to be a mortal human? You know, like, that struggle of losing.
Dude, I mean, keep in mind, like, this is, like, I think that this is what our version of, like, the robot people is older versions of gods. They can't die.
That's awesome. That's a good point.
You know, it's like, now we're just, like, in the
middle.
But
they're real.
Are they?
Robots, yeah.
Oh, yeah, robots are definitely real. Yeah, they can...
Zeus, Athena, Apollo. Not.
I mean, are you a fucking...
Socrates.
You're not a religious guy, right?
I'm obsessed with world religion.
Are you a religious guy, though?
What does that mean?
Like, are you, like...
No.
I'm like, yeah, no. Like, being interested in it and, like, being obsessed with it is very different than, like, actually...
Do I believe in the gospel beyond... I'm on a search for a redefinition of subjective truth.
Sure.
Dude. Like, the way we perceive things, this object, it's obviously this tall and this round, but what color is that?
To me?
Exactly my point.
Yeah. This is how I think about... I'm happy you're here, because I literally, every time somebody says something, I'm like, to me? What do you think? Me? What do I think?
Yep.
And I get in trouble with this shit all the time. Good thing that you're in a big band where you can just kind of say stuff. People are like, yeah, I agree with that guy. Instead of me being here on the phone with, like, fucking a record label, and they're like, what the fuck is this dude talking about? Why is he talking to me about this shit?
Systems are deep.
Look, man, you get a microphone. That's what I need in here. Yeah. It's just a microphone. And then maybe they'll listen to me more.
I mean, you do your calls on speakerphone anyway.
Yeah,
I feel like
it's interesting.
Keep it away from my ear.
It's interesting to think about religion I've never been religious or anything like that. I also studied world religion. I mean, very briefly, but I almost feel like music is religion. You know, like going to a show for me is like going to church. And also emo night, I feel like, has created an environment where we're like, this is people are like, this is my church. This is my once a month that I go, and yeah. I'm surrounded by the people that are like-minded, and the music is, you know, the preacher, essentially. Of
course. Such a powerful point, and it's so true. When I was growing up in the church, wanting to please my parents,
sure,
and so believing with all my heart in all the things they told me were true.
What, from a young age, were you like, I believe this?
Well, we grow up in what our parents say to us is sacred. They are gods. They're infallible. Until that point, we realize they're not. So in the church setting, I was feeling the spirit so strongly, to emotionally, spiritually, to tears, ontologically, like beyond my physical being. And that is a human phenomenon. That's emo night. When people come together, you can feel this. We have an innate need to connect with humans. That's what being human is. And spirituality has gotten so, it's such a confused term, really. But how spiritual, how lifted, how psychically tuned in do you feel at a show? To joy, to pain, and what's the difference? And I've noticed this record has been a lot about catharsis, which is an easy word to throw around, but the psychological healing power of religion, which is music for
music,
me.
Yeah.
Because we all have so much time to fill on this planet, and what do we choose to fill it with? God, sports, money, vibrations, human expression is what I've chosen.
Yeah. So on that note, can you kind of go into what the album's about and, you know, what kind of motivated you to write all these songs and sort of the story behind it?
We got the Cliff Notes.
We got the Cliff Notes version. I would love to hear.
I'll submit the errata in a bit because there's a lot of, I need to clean up those notes a bit. But the record, The Canyon, is a metaphor on a couple different levels. I grew up near Provo Canyon. And it was a place where a lot of my earliest childhood memories were developed in a happy atmosphere.
I grew up in Park City.
Oh, nice. So you know. Close. Right up around the loop.
Mm-hmm.
So, magic for me in this canyon. Campouts with my family. And tinfoil dinners. If you grew up, you probably know what a tinfoil dinner is.
Mm-hmm.
Just throw a bunch of stuff in tinfoil and it becomes your dinner. And then last year, while we were on the first and second record anniversary shows, which is a lot about Provo Canyon. It's a lot about everything that kind of, when I grew up, when I dropped out of high school and was transferred to a different high school, I met a whole different group of people and was introduced to music in a different way and lyrics in a different way. And that's when I found that music was my religion, my place in a spiritual world, my connection to something greater. Let's put it simply, something greater than me. And
you remember that exact point?
I do. It was it involved getting high. It involved Shannon Hoon and Blind Melon, and specifically the song Mouthful of Cavities. Right at Upper Falls, about maybe 500 yards from, on the tour last year, I got a horrible phone call. My friend had blown his brains out in the canyon, and that was violently said. He had taken his own life in the canyon, only to find out that he was on prescription medication for a really long time, 15 years. Stopped taking it, and it was only about 7 days later that he killed himself.
For like methadone?
No, some type of Prozac or antidepressant. He wasn't an addict in that way. So we'd already had about two or three writing sessions, and at the beginning of this year I went to Justin's house to work out melodies. And
so this was before. This is like right at the beginning.
This was the end of September.
This was right at the beginning of the writing process for the new album. Though.
We had had a couple writing sessions before that. Sure. Since Justin came in the band about 3 years ago, in between tours, we would take 2 weeks and have a writing session here or there. I think there was maybe four total. So this was maybe halfway through material as well. In January, I spent about a week, just Justin and I at his house, sorting out what maybe this record could be about. And we had a moment in his studio room that feels a lot like the monologue at the beginning of the record. We realized we could write a song that maybe captured that feeling of something impossible happening, being able to get to be in the same room with someone you've lost, and what would you say to that person? What could you say? How special that would be. Something magic, you know, something that's not possible. But it is with music, I think. And so from there, we had a really kind of, not a kind of strong idea, we had a very strong idea of what we were going for, what was maybe possible. And then all these things came together in this really natural way. We played the live and acoustic show at the Palace, which really inspired a need to make a record that captured the live essence of the Used.
That was one of the best shows I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, thank
you. I pretty much cried the whole time.
Oh, that's awesome. We actually just FaceTimed. Was it Rocky? So Rocky's daughter, one of the guys that's been coming to our night since the very beginning.
Do you
beginning.
Remember him? He was in the front row with a full like face painting.
Mm. I feel like he actually maybe dressed up. He did like a Clockwork Orange thing.
Oh, really?
But either way, his daughter... she's like, what, like five?
Yeah.
Four?
He's a huge, huge fan.
Yeah, so we were like,
so they
hey,
went
you,
together.
We were like,
we got them tickets, right?
Yeah, we got them tickets, but we just FaceTimed her, like, hey, do you have any questions? And she was like, no, this is how you hug through a phone. And also, I watch that DVD every day or something. Like,
yeah.
So she's really like, awesome.
They saved a flower from the stage.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, it was really
and
cool.
And the pamphlet. From it is on his wall.
That's sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was really cool. That show was, like, really, really special to, like, I think a lot of people. I remember Babs was, like, fucking lost her shit.
I agree. For me, that's really what it's all about. And recording it with that plan, with that intention to keep it that way. If I forgot every word, we'd keep it that way.
Yeah.
Totally.
That's what we wanted to people to hear on our record. That's what we wanted to... the world we wanted to live in writing the record. And rock and roll nostalgia for me looks like a brown studio where people are doing endless amount of takes to capture it on tape.
Yeah, on tape, right?
And and meeting with producers, Ross Robinson was the guy. He so brave and fearless, and he has a really specific idea about how music can be heard.
Was this on tape? Did you guys record this on tape?
Yeah.
You did this all on tape?
All of it on tape. Nothing fixed. No,
really?
Vocals fixed.
I was like, fuck.
We didn't use a computer as an instrument.
That is.
We just made a Tom Petty record.
That didn't monologue know that. At the beginning, is that that's just unscripted? That's like a real thing that you guys.
While we were recording lyrics, so I'll speed through this. We did pre-production at Center Staging where we rehearse, and songs started to kind of come together, and we noticed we had way too much material. And in that way, this story started to kind of be built in my mind. Then we recorded drums at Dave Grohl's studio, 606. We were the first band to use his tape machine, which he got from Richard Marx. So,
really?
So you can hear all the Richard
Marx. Is it in his
Marx.
Garage? Is it in Dave Grohl's garage?
No, he has
like
a...
Is this the spot where
no,
he has
like a billion-dollar studio. This
really?
Yeah. Are you kidding?
I met his mom.
He got the mix.
I don't know. I met his mom somewhere, and she was so nice.
So all the drums...
Yeah, but I thought he
this
put
record
it into
was
his
recorded.
House.
Yeah, so did I. I thought he fucking had a studio in his house also.
No. Well, of course he does.
Probably
yeah.
does.
Yeah, he has a studio in his car.
Probably, right?
And
he's just like,
yeah.
I can put a studio there. I'm going to do that.
Everywhere.
Yeah, right?
But yeah, he. Same board.
The Sound City board.
Sound City board.
Yeah.
Same board we recorded on. So it's.
That's awesome.
It's Nirvana. It's,
yeah.
it's magic.
Yeah, that is fucking wild.
And we realized during the recording of the. Drums, because you have to play it like a show. When you record live drums, you have to really be in it. If you're not in it, everyone's sweating. And during most of these songs, we noticed the emotion was so high intensity, like we would be done and just everybody sobbing. We don't know why. We don't even know what's going on. A little lyric, like, just the formulation of the song. So then we took it to Valentine's, which is this restored 60s studio where they did all the Bugs Bunny voices and they did all the, like the Rat Pack wife beater cocaine guys did all their wife beating and cocaine stuff. And
wife beating and cocaine stuff. Yeah.
You know, like,
I know all those.
Sinatra, heroes. They're the greatest guys. Such good guys.
Wait, really quick. This is the first time you guys have ever recorded an album like this? Like live?
Of course, yeah.
Okay, great. That's all I wanted to know.
And then, so we'd get to work at about noon. Jeff would do bass for like 8 hours. Justin would do guitar for about six. And then at around midnight, we'd get a bunch of coffee going. And before we do vocals, we'd do. Ross called it psychic surgery. I don't know if Ross called it that. Maybe that was just somebody called it that. But it's really like a full blown therapy session before we would do vocals. And we would get on this level of way deeper than I've ever even wanted to go with my journal and what's happened to me in my life. And so what you hear at the beginning of the record, the monologue, was the first time that the whole band was in, sitting in the, we built this little cave inside the studio for Plato, for his allegory of the cave. We built a little cave, and it was the only night that the whole band was sitting in there. We recorded For You really late on in the record. It was the last song recorded, actually. And what you hear at the beginning of the record is the therapeutic session or the real connection or the psychic surgery in its entirety. It was just that long.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like you can hear, like, the shift in your voice when you realize, like, this is, like, how I'm going to achieve that magic that you're talking about. You know, like, you were like, I know he's here. I know he's here in this... And it's such like an interesting way to start that record.
It's Hamlet's ghost. That's always hard for me to say because I don't know if people are as familiar with Hamlet as I am, and I give them credit that they are. But the beginning of Hamlet, the ghost comes to the garden. It's the very, very first thing that happens in the play, and it's profound. Why? Why do we get the ghost right off the bat? It sticks with you and haunts you for the entire play. Nobody ever questions the ghost, really. And for that reason, I fought for this monologue to be at the beginning. Also,
who'd you fight?
Everyone. Everyone.
You fight Sean
for it. It wasn't a fight. It was just so passionate. Because also, the way I structured the record is Thomas Pynchon's Gravity's Rainbow. So it is that parabolic, the divine absence, or the absence of what you and I think of when we think of God, or what they think of, or what my parents think of. That's the vertex of the record. And I'm just going to keep throwing it out there. Infinite Jest is one of the most important pieces of art in my entire life, and I'm obsessed with it as well. So the beginning of Infinite Jest, all great art kind of seems to be in this annulation, this ring. The beginning of Jest is also like the beginning of Hamlet. It's Hal in this flailing, like, what happened to Hal? The rest of the book, you're stuck there.
Yeah, you opened it up on something that should be...
Will haunt the you whole, for the rest of the record.
The record.
But yeah. I also wanted... We talked about specifically before we started making the record, we wanted to make a record that people... that exposed people's entitled, educated opinions about everything, including art. We wanted to stay in character... as us, our true selves, naked, on YouTube, crying about things that matter to us, that we understand that pain of loss and what it means to heal is so painful. That's love actualized. So, wow.
Yeah. I have a couple of things. And one of them is like... The grief process, like your grief process and what that looks like. And the reason why I ask that is just because, like, you know, I go, when we lose things, we lose people, we lose relationships, we lose, you know, we grieve over things, lose jobs, you know, anything is a grief process. And some are more, who's to say, more important than others, but like, I know how some people deal with it. I know how... Actually, I don't know how I deal with it. And I was wondering if, like, this album is that process for you. And, like, or is just music in a whole that process? Because the way that I look at stuff is I try and if I don't feel good, I'll try to do something that fixes it. And it usually doesn't work, and it usually takes time, and it usually takes something that I wasn't expecting. But for something like this, like, is this album part of that process, or is it just part of the whole?
I think I noticed years after how I dealt with death. The Hardcore Use fans know about Kate. She was the first love of my life. The girl I did every first thing with. Sex, mm-hmm. smokes, mm-hmm. drugs.
Sure.
Even just like sneaking out.
Sure. All that it's stuff. Important.
All the stuff. Questioning beliefs. It was the first person I did everything with. So we built this mountain of we know so much about each other. And that's painful, that part of being a human, that part of sharing and connecting. And when she overdosed, I internalized it. And I became stone. And I started just pouring alcohol on stone. And I never talked about it. Mm. And it's a very painful part of this new story, that how connected everything is to the old story, because Kate was given drugs by Tregan,
sure.
who I don't know if he ever forgave himself for that. And that even hurts my feelings talking about that, because he has family and friends, and there's just some impossibly heavy honesties that can't be avoided, I think. A lot of this record is too personal. Like, the journal entries are so severe, and in that way, I'm opening up my story to deal with death the opposite way that I dealt with it last time. When I got the call that Tregan died, killed himself, I started talking to everyone about it. I was on tour, so I even started talking to...
This is opposite how you did it last time.
I started to, and I don't drink anymore, so mm-hmm. I have no escape like that.
Mm-hmm. Did you do that consciously?
Yes.
Because you remembered how shitty it was to keep it all inside.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I started talking to fans after the show about it, people I didn't even know, crying. I just lost a friend. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to do it. I don't know how to deal with it. I still don't. A year is a fuck. It's so quick. It's tough because it's so tricky. Healing is so painful that half the time I'm like, I'm not healing, you know, but this record is another huge part of that. I had to talk about things that... Tregan's the only man I care to put emphasis on the importance of my physical intimate relation with him. I was in love with him.
Mm-hmm.
The song About You is about us kissing, but it's also about a night where we were lost in the world and Kate was asleep right there next to us.
Mm-hmm.
Which is so hard for me to even think about, let alone sing about. But that's it.
Yeah,
that's how I'm trying.
You're
this
doing it.
Time
look,
that's how I'm putting myself out there, because it's I know that what I can give, I say that in over and over again, the only way I know how to give is to suck up a bunch of stuff and then maybe try to tell it back. Like, I was trying to tell Sean what the Iliad is on the way here, just really quick, because it's so important. The contrast of mortality is so heavy. And how do we deal with death? And what does it mean? The fact that it gives us the opportunity to love and the opportunity to be brave. I've already said that, but it's so hard to feel those things. Those are so real. Those are so true. And, only way I know how to give is to open myself up like that. Maybe you can be healed, or I guess it's the same reason why I teach my daughter Shakespeare's soliloquies to memorize, because if she understands she's not alone in dealing with these unfathomably deep questions, philosophical questions, if she knows she's not alone in that feeling, then she'll be better off. Just like you and you and you, we're not alone. We can...
So... having her in mind and wanting to instill that in her, you know, when we were talking to Rocky, he was telling me that he saw some videos of you in the vocal booth and you always had a picture of your daughter up on the wall. Do you think, like, having her in mind and that importance of, like, being open and helped you to open yourself?
100%. When, for parents out there, you know that love is this instant creation. It doesn't take anything. It comes out of nowhere instantly, and it's so absolutely destroying.
That's fucking weird.
And I've realized
it's a weird thing.
I can. That's endless. I have all of that. Mm. I can create that out of nowhere. That will never end. There's not a limited amount that I have. And when she was born, I realized like the center of the universeness of me from the center of everything is so far from true. It's her world that I'm looking out for. You know.
Yeah.
I think that what is really what I think is really important about this album, and I think about important about like what you're doing and what the band is doing, and what hopefully that people listen to this are doing, is that there's some sort of relief. Like we like as an artist and as a musician and as like people that. We throw a party because we give 5 hours of people to like forget about all of the shit that is happening, right? It's not good. Like, it's not good. Like, no matter what way you swing it. And so I think for somebody like you and band and just how much shit that is going on, it's like we are doing our part to relieve that bit of stress and that bit of like, you know, so when they listen and learn how to deal,
of course.
And learn how to, and like maybe have their own way, figure out their own way of dealing with something and show that to somebody else. And I feel like that's the best, what you're saying, you're like, oh, we have this time, this amount of time, right, that we're here. And like if I, my grandma always said this, my dad, you saw that, my dad like wrote me in this fucking email, he's like, we showed him. We made this like little documentary about how important Emo and I is to you know everybody that's been really affected by it. And you know, my dad was like, "Oh, I get it now." He's like, "I get it." He's like, "You know, your grandma said that if you, I forgot what it was, but it was like if you can leave here and made a positive impact on one person's life, then you did okay." You know, and I think that by you putting this album out and doing something different than you did last time, instead of drinking at that and doing it all, changing all this stuff, I think it will probably end up helping way more people than I think that you could imagine.
You touched on a really beautiful thing. When we talked about church or religion or emo night, church, right? Mm-hmm. People don't go to church to escape. It's not like drinking. People don't go to emo night to escape. They go to emo night to feel everything. Mm-hmm. To take all of that and make something else of it, right? It's like, I don't want kids at my show to escape. I want them to jump headfirst into it.
Turn it into something.
The only way we can figure anything out. It's like, why am I so fucked up over my story not being as important as their story? That's a big problem for me, is I feel like I'm so gifted. I'm not gifted. I've been so quote unquote blessed.
Sure.
It's a gift. My life is
right.
I spend all day doing things I love to do, reading, writing, singing. And so for me, there's this conflict. I can't complain about anything. My problems aren't real. Like, art is hard, like counting stars.
It's, sure.
But it is important.
It's very important.
And so there's, in that mess, why am I fucked up on that? Like, why do I think that way? It's abuse, it's the past, it's easy to get habitually systematized about negativity.
Right.
We soak it in three times more than positive information. We remember the negative things way more than the positive things. But if I allow myself what I did in the cave, if I go there, and talking to Sean about this, like talking about this record has been harder than I thought, because at the end of the day I'm so exhausted because I can't talk about it on a surface level. I can't talk about it flippantly.
Yeah, you can't do a 5-minute thing on it. It's just not gonna work.
And most of the time, you know, you get an interview and it's like, how you doing? Which is, it's like, I'm okay. Yeah. And then, so tell us a little bit about the record.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah. I don't know how you're going to do that in like fucking...
But then I do, because it's so important to do that. And the butterfly effect.
Let me ask you this.
Grandma's point is such a beautiful point. Look, maybe just that smile.
Look, dude, she was awesome. She was really, really cool. It was like... I was a bad kid. I still am kind of a bad kid. You know? Like, that's just the way I am. And she always was like, you're my favorite. You know, like, and I was like, fucking why? Like, why?
Grandma.
Yeah, like, but like, no.
I think Grandma knew that the ability to go to the darkest places gives people a different perspective on the light.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of shit is very important to me now after having done all this stuff that I do. Like a lot of really small things that didn't used to matter a lot. And all of the big things that I thought that mattered don't matter at all.
Right.
You know? And I think that's like kind of, like, you know, I really actually do really want to listen to the whole album in full with headphones. I think that's probably like the best way to go about it.
I recommend it.
Yeah. I feel like that's the best. We fucking woke up.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. I really enjoyed driving through Michigan where it's actually fall.
Yeah.
It's like 8 in the morning. It's really spooky. There's like fog like rolling through the
cornfield. Fog's like lower somehow there than here.
This is kind of a great way to listen to this album for the first time.
Yeah. But
that is awesome.
I want to finish it.
Yeah, it was cool. We like, you know, we woke up super fucking early. And we're like, let's do this thing.
Yeah, we're just like coffee. So out of it and just.
But it was like TJ's right. TJ's right. There are certain ways to live. Like, you know, I remember.
Like, I feel like it's something we'll never forget. You know, that moment, the three of us in the car. You know, we rarely the three of us get to do emo nights together. Now we'll take turns.
Right.
So I think it was a special moment, just like the three of us being together. And
art has
to
that
it.
Really cool place, like food. Some smells take you right back to.
That's
like
most mainly for me.
Grandma's house,
mainly,
you know,
smells,
I mean?
For me, because I don't remember fucking anything else.
But music, the vibration of music, like smell, like color, like sound, is all the same. And we can it's I've found just as potent. That's a smell. It's crazy.
Well, I'm really...
You know those captain hats that we got for the cruise?
Yeah.
I ordered them from an Etsy store in Massachusetts, and it was like down by the ocean or whatever. And I opened the box, and it just smelled like a musty New England basement, and I was immediately like at
back
my grandma's
home.
House. Yeah.
Awesome.
When we checked into our Airbnb, I had that same thing. The smell was a real thing. It's the... I heard somewhere that smell is the... biggest sensory of memory. I don't know if I'm lying or I made that up or it's because I believe it, but I swear somebody was like, dude, that's why you feel so much when you smell. And I,
what's it called when people can't smell?
I like how we looked at Sean like he should know. Like we're like, what the fuck, you don't know this?
Nose. That fool's nose blind.
Yeah, it's technically nose blind is the medical condition of it. Yeah.
Olfactory like, yes. Blindness.
I mean, so, yeah, we touched on a bunch. I mean, there's like a, obviously, it's weird because like there are others, there's like other stuff that, you know, I feel like we could go over, but.
The possibly impossible is right below the surface. We made a record that says a lot on the surface, but the true meaning of the record and the true vibration for your soul,
of the cave.
It's right under the surface. And I think for the hardcore Use fans, you find my entire life in this record. Everything I love is in there. Everything I've ever read, everything I've ever worshipped, I tried to put in. Oh, I was like, what?
Yeah, it's anosmia.
Anosmia?
Yeah.
That is
like,
beautiful!
Let's just call it nose blind.
Anosmic.
See, I feel like Ricky knew that.
Yeah.
You did know that, didn't you?
Yeah.
But I really like nose blind.
Ricky's like the most low-key funny dude you'll ever meet. Like, somebody will say something, like, and he just will say, you have to ask him to repeat a joke.
Yeah, he whispers.
He's the opposite of me, where I, like, yell it as loud as I can to make sure everybody knows that I said
it.
We're very similar.
Yeah, 10 times.
You heard me, right? You heard me.
Yeah, and Ricky will say something.
And then the thing, like, what he does is he'll tell us something, and then he'll think it's really funny, and then, you know, one person will come in, immediately tell them, get on the phone, immediately
tell them.
Yeah. You know what's funny is a lot of people always See,
we're so
Morgan,
alike.
Morgan
oh, yeah.
What's
like
wrong with
that,
us?
That is a weird thing. There was a... I never thought that. And then there was like a... You guys were on the cover of the Alternative Press. And like one of the... Alternative Press sent us like a fucking box full of magazines for some reason. And you guys were on the cover of one in the bathroom, and every time I went to go take a piss, I'd look down and I'd be like, "Fuck am I doing?" Oh, and then and like I thought someone had put a picture, and it just because when I had short hair, like when I had shorter hair, like it was, and I never saw it until I was pissing.
Yeah.
So there you go. Like there you, I mean, go. There you go. But
One thing I was gonna say is that you should put out a list of books that people should read.
Oh, cool.
Before
good idea.
Listening to the record.
They won't do it, but I could put
it
in.
Oh, for sure. Hey. But the thing is, some people will, and I think that's fucking awesome.
Well,
you know?
I could tell you right
and
now
I
that
would personally like also
that
like
you
that list
need
of books.
To read Ulysses after you read The Odyssey, and then Gravity's Rainbow and Infinite Jest and Homage to Catalonia and Hamlet and Macbeth. That'll almost cover it.
Okay.
But
it would take me like 10 years.
But the Metamorphosis, both Kafka's and Ovid's, are very important.
Something is going on.
I've read most of these, but
okay, cool.
I should read.
You've read
them.
Ulysses?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
I have not.
It took me.
I read
the Iliad
forever.
And the Odyssey and Metamorphosis, and then I started Infinite Jest, and I was just like, this is so
when you guys
long.
Were doing that,
I used this
passed
used
out
this
in the kitchen
lot.
Somewhere.
Hold on, I'll play a bit. I'm working on it.
As soon as the men had prayed and flung the barley, first they lifted back the heads of the victims, slit their throats, skinned them, and carved away the meat from the thigh bones, and wrapped them in fat. A double fold sliced clean and topped with strips of flesh. And the old man burned these over dried split wood, and over quarters poured out glistening wine, while young men at his side held 5-pronged forks. Once they had burned the bones and tasted the organs, they cut the rest into pieces, pierced them with spits, roasted them to a turn, and pulled them off
small,
the fire.
Small, simple, safe price.
I feel like
that's a sacrifice to Apollo at the beginning of the Iliad.
I just recited. Here's the cool thing:
I'm
is it,
on an audiobook.
It sounds,
yeah,
it sounds,
right?
It sounds even better through like kind of a shitty microphone and like through kind of a shitty thing.
Awesome.
It sounds better.
Oh my god!
That's I cool. think it's awesome.
That was
That's
a cool. lot. my brain just shut down.
Wait, aren't those books like public domain
are
now,
we,
too?
Yeah, they're all kind of free.
Oh, Ricky has a
Ricky
question.
Has a question.
This is the best one. He has a question. I'm all so
right,
excited. All right,
Ricky, get in the mic because you're gonna fucking
okay.
we're gonna make you do it again
you're
anyway.
Whisper.
Gotcha. So you mentioned sequencing and how important that was, and I love that because it's something I try and pay attention to when I'm
awesome.
Listening to an album, specifically like right in the middle or in the latter half. I mean, you have over and over again. It there's a clear structure to this thing where it feels like that's almost like the climax or anyway. Yeah. I felt that very strongly. And then the songs that follow afterwards feel very like a downslope or some kind of realization happens there.
Yeah. I guess the only important thing to understand from my point of view as structure's concerned is, I'm not sure that David Foster Wallace really wrote Infinite Jest on Thomas Pynchon's Gravity's Rainbow or the Parabola.
Yeah.
The reason why it's called the Gravity's Rainbow is that's what happens to a rocket when you shoot it. It makes it forms, and that's what gravity does to a rocket. But that's what I tried to do, and the first half of the record of the climb to the divine absence is Tregan's story and his struggle with life, and you notice the upper falls is his actual death, and then the second half of the record is my reflection on his story.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the structure was really clear there, and then use a lot of sounds. Sorry, I'm not very articulate here, but different sounds, a lot of strings, and in that latter half, I felt that especially more. And then there's the one song that kind of starts with a kind of a gospel, almost like
gospel
but,
choir, yeah.
But it escaped me the first time, but then it comes back around at the very end, at the end of a very aggressive song. Sorry, I can't remember the title.
The Nexus.
The Nexus. Yeah, and that comes around again at the end, and I was just wondering what that choice was as far as including that, and then having, you know, a fairly like high energy song, and then having it end with that.
Right. The the strings is the same. We got the same family back together from the Live and Acoustic. So
oh shit, really?
This guy
yeah,
here.
Yeah, that's awesome.
With just the intentions that we could do the whole sure. thing live, like it sounds on the record.
Yeah.
So, Hero arranged. Moondream was this song on the back burner that kind of initially was like a kind of almost a synthy sounding song. We gave it to him and he arranged it just strings like Eleanor Rigby. And that's the song My Daughter Starts. The next
yeah,
is
a beautiful song.
When we finished the chorus, it seems so anthemic, like a 80s. Butt rock anthem. I don't know how many bands can say their own name. We are the Used. That's what I'm saying.
Right,
we are
right,
the
right,
Used,
right.
But not defeated. So how many bands can say their own name in a song? It's almost so. It's so poisonous.
Yeah. No. We got. Yeah.
But in that way, also that how epic it is. I was like, how perfect for a gospel choir to be singing those words with me.
Yeah, I found it just really declarative. Yeah. I mean, I you don't hear that from a band.
You also don't hear that word from you ever.
Yeah.
So
it's very key.
For a band to just say like, oh, like, I mean, like you said, like, whoa, we're poison and we do this, blah, blah, blah. Like at the end of the song, you guys are, it's just like almost a chant.
Yeah,
like,
we are the
we're
Used.
The Used. And it,
that's not us, that's us. All of us. But it's really key that you pointed out that it goes full circle. It's a ring because it's actually my proudest lyrical work, and it's a song about my daughter. The verses, if you notice, I have way too many books, but they're not mine. They're already hers. And the more you know, the less you know kind of thing. But a lot deeper than that. There's really
yeah.
cool references to the Sermon on the Mount meets Facebook and all this really cool stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's so much buried in there, but like, you know, when you say Odysseus surrenders and all of that, I mean, there's clearly levels and even this discussion.
Yeah,
know,
I think that what I'm really excited about is 6 months from now, the interviews that I get to do for people that really dug in.
Like that fucking, like, sat there
and dug in
and took it in. Yeah.
The idea of Odysseus surrendering, right? Because what, surrendering from what? We know that the war is over and he's on his way home. So if he just didn't go home to Penelope, what kind of world would we be in?
Dude, here's the thing. Everybody needs to do their homework now. Like, that's what's great. It's like, well,
the most important thing about David Foster Wallace's book is he made me feel smart. He made me remember why I learned to read in the first place. He challenged me, and you are smarter when you finish his book. So I wanted to give people a little bit of a challenge. I mean, I'm so inspired by words that I think that other people could be as well, pointed in the right direction.
Well, I think a lot of other people, after, like, hearing this, hearing the album, will probably be inspired to do a bunch of shit. Like, that who knew... What the, you know, like, now I'm like, yeah, maybe I should fucking read something. You know, like, just, and this has only been, like, you know, an hour. And
don't be daunted, because audiobook. Go crazy.
Dude,
just
let me
put
tell
it
you,
in your ear.
It's not that. It's just my brain. I'll sit there.
I'm with you.
And I I'll be like, I have 1,000 other things that reminded me of that thing, yeah. And then I'll do, and then.
Morgan's also a very.
Are you a good ice skater?
Person.
I'm not an ice skater.
So imagine
you ice skating.
Like, your first day out ice skating,
yeah.
You're like, man, this is hard, I suck at it.
Look.
Imagine you ice skate for 5 years straight. You'd be yeah. like, man, I'm way less distracted when I ice skate, I'm way better at it, I'm actually in a flow, and I can ice skate for fucking hours.
Yeah.
ice skating.
I fucking, this is what my therapist has been telling me about meditation. He's like...
It's like everything. We expect to be good at things
and
right
I,
away.
And,
we're insane.
And I,
yeah.
and it,
I mean,
and
meditation
like this,
takes more work than anything else.
Yeah, I mean, I've been going at
and
it for about like 9 years
happens,
now.
Well, the
and
idea
it just
of
does,
nirvana,
I can't do
it's
it.
Like there's people who've been meditating their whole life and still don't get there. So it's like you gotta be better than that.
I fucking have no.
I'm kidding. That's the opposite of meditation.
It's made me. It has made me.
But it takes so much work.
But it's not what the... Okay, I like how Alan Watts describes meditation as... It's not... It's like dancing. If the point was to dance the best or get to the end of the song, the fastest dancer would win. It's nothing like that. It's we don't dance for any other reason.
But I don't
mean the journey, baby.
Like, I don't mean... Not
the...
You know what I mean?
I'm with you.
Yeah. Like, it's so hard to shut the mind off.
Look at the world we live in.
Yeah, exactly.
We're trained to be distracted.
Look, it is a fucking...
We're trained.
You know what the biggest joy in my entire life would be? Is if I could just when I'm ready to go to sleep, be like, go to sleep, and then you're out.
Turn the switch.
That's it. That I wish for that every single night.
We touched on a moment earlier about the infallibility and the almost godlike presence that parents have in children's life until that moment where you've realized your parents don't know anything. Mine was way, way, way too early, and I asked my dad, so how do you sleep? How do you go to sleep? You just shut your eyes. I'm like, holy shit, I'm alone in this world. You don't know anything.
I can't wait till
you have no idea what you're talking about. How dare you create me?
I can't wait to be a dad so I can just, my answer for everything is, I don't know, magic.
It's magic.
How do airplanes work? Magic.
Magic.
Yeah. All right,
dude. That was the point.
Yeah.
You're like,
yep.
Doomed. You know nothing.
Doomed. How devastating to realize your dad is not God.
Isn't this a weird fucking... recently my mom, I had that thing with my mom where I was like, I don't know if you know what you're talking about. And then just like really recently where I was like, that's not right. Which is really strange because I'm 33. So I should have... I was just like, yeah, I don't know if you're right.
My mom's been in her own world for so long that it's easy for me to just kind of float next to.
Really, really quick. Are they super pumped on like what's going on? Because I always feel, if I had any sort of, my parents have been awesome. Like no matter what I have done, like they're just like they're just like be safe. Like we support you. Even when I am not safe, you know, they're like, just, they want me to be safe. But they like, no matter what I do, they have been supportive and awesome parents. And
there's a different level of respect than there was even when it's been a long time where they've been happy and proud of me.
Sure.
They're glad I do what I do and I'm really passionate about it. They see that. I think that for some people, and I want to say this very, very sensitively, because of course I love my parents, of course. Some things are easier left unsaid.
Sure.
Yeah.
Totally.
I love the idea of having an amazing relationship with my parents, and that is real and that's true when I don't try to dissect it or get too deep involved and just let it be what it is. And that's a good way to like respect people's beliefs, because I have to get to the bottom of everything.
So you have to unfriend all your aunts and uncles on Facebook.
I don't have any social media, so I'm safe from that world.
You really
I'm untouched
are making a
I have,
right decision.
Well, I have books to read.
You are making the right choice every day. I think that's part of the reason why
I'm too obsessive, and
it'll just fucking drive you crazy.
Well, I'll just suck up all my time. It feeds people inferiority.
It makes me feel like shit every single fucking day.
Yeah, we don't need to feel any shittier about ourselves than we already do.
Yeah,
there's so much emphasis on aesthetic nonsense that let's get in deeper.
Yeah, the only reason I ask parents thing is I always just wonder like what, you know, at the like. It's really easy for, at the end of the day, like, you're a rock star. You know what I mean? So, like, and that's what if your parents would be like, oh, yeah, my son is this. And I always wondered, like, what would it be like if I was that? And, like, or, like, what other rock stars' parents are there, like, yeah, he just plays music to a bunch of, or they're like, he's awesome and he plays to all these people and they really, really, like, I don't
think about it that much. There's a point in Infinite Jest. There's a guru. There's like a yogic guru. His name's Lyle, and he floats right above the towel dispenser, and he licks the sweat off the ETA tennis kids with his scratch cat tongue. But he's a smart, really, really genius. And there's like an 11-year-old kid named Lamont Chu. He's obsessed with becoming a famous tennis player. Obsessed. And all he does is look at the magazines and sees the people, and he has these feelings. And Lyle tells him very simply that there's no reciprocation for that on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
Period.
All right, that answers my question. I think that answers that's a good one. All right.
This has been awesome, you guys.
Yeah.
And
really
thank
fun.
You for Emo Night, because it's so worth it for kids to be able to, like we just said, a healthy escape like church, which is not an escape at all. It's actually getting to the bottom of it.
Yeah.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah.
Hey, thank you. And thank you for cruising in on a Saturday.
Anytime.
And like you said, and like you said, let's talk in 6 months.
I can't wait.
Let's talk. Yeah. Let's do some reading. Let's dig in, and then we'll do this again in 6 months.
We'll do the reading and the listening.
Yeah.
And I think everybody actually out there should do the same fucking thing. I think it'll be good for you no matter what. So
that's sweet.
I mean, it'll be good for me.
Yeah.
You know, I'm really easy good at giving and not taking my own. All right, guys.
Thank you so much, Bert.
Hell yeah. Thanks for your time. This was really, truly awesome.
All right. When does the album come out?
October 27th, so we're moments away.
All right, we had to do the plug. Yeah. All right, guys. Bye.
Bye.
You are now listening to the Ride or Cry podcast.
Bonjour, this is Fabulously Delicious, the French food podcast. I'm Andrew Pryor, and every week I bring you the wonderful and fabulous people involved in French food, whether they're here in France like me or from around the world. Enchanté. Each week, we dive into a specific topic, be it a French dish, an ingredient, or a French cuisine cooking technique. My guests are all about French food, so come join me on Fabulously Delicious, the French food podcast. Bon app.